But again, this has been Flashpoints. I'm Dennis Bernstein. This is your daily investigative news magazine.
KPFA brings the listening public the other point of view.
There was a strong sense that this was the beginning of something that would spread across the country.
On Sunday, November 3rd, at the historic Hollywood Theater, KBOO presents an exclusive benefit screening of the film KPFA On the Air.
This documentary tells the powerful story of the beginnings of listener-sponsored radio in the United States with the birth of Pacifica in Berkeley in 1949.
KPFA On the Air chronicles the origins of the free speech movement, the first stirrings of the student movements at Berkeley, and opposition to the Vietnam War in the early 1960s.
Eventually spawning a network of free-form, independent radio stations across the country, including KBOO, which came on the air in 1968. So come join us at the Hollywood Theater, Northeast 41st and Sandy Boulevard, Sunday, November 3rd, at 7 in the evening.
Help keep community radio strong and thriving into the future.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to help co-sponsor the Visegrad Group PDX Festival, November 9th from 1 p.m. to 7 p.m. at the Polish Hall, 3832 North Interstate Avenue in Portland. To celebrate the 95th anniversary of independence of the Czech, Polish, and Hungarian nations, this one-day festival will share traditions, history, arts, and crafts, and national food of the Czech, Polish, and Hungarian communities within Multnomah County. Again, the Visegrad Group PDX Festival will take place at the Polish Hall, 3832 North Interstate Avenue, on Saturday, November 9th, from 1 to 7 p.m. More information about this KBOO-sponsored event may be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
You're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM. Stay tuned for It Takes a Village. Hi, I'm Shahid Hamid, host of It Takes a Village. You know, street gangs have the dubious distinction of being the most significant phenomena to impact the black community in the last 50 years. Yet we know so little about the inner workings of some of the most significant organizations in the black community. Today, we welcome you to part two of Confessions of a Gangbanger, The Turnaround. My guest is Mr. Arj Johnson, a.k.a. Joe Johnson / Solo, a former gangbanger himself who served 16 years in the state prison system. We'll be back to talk about street gangs in just a moment. Arj, welcome to It Takes a Village. I'm certainly glad that you could join us again today.
Glad to be back. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. How organized are the gangs? Give us a sense of the organizational structure of a gang. How are leaders chosen, and what's the organizational aspect of street gangs?
Well, if I had to, sum it up in a nutshell, every king doesn't nominate themselves for the position. It's usually the people, and it's through leadership. Now, you know, it's ill-practiced leadership, but nonetheless, it's through leadership. So it's the people that nominate a leader to be a leader.
Mm-hmm. We talked last time about admission rituals. You talked about how you had to kind of, I guess they all jump on you or something, and you have to fight each one or something. Just fight in order to be admitted. How tough is it? How tough is that that ritual?
Well, it's a go through. It's one that's becoming, you know, extinct. There's different ways of initiation in the here and now times, and even, you know, when I was age 14, growing up, it's still different ways of initiation, and it's a real difficult challenge. As a young man struggling to find his way from boyhood into manhood, you know, breaking the cocoon of boyhood, it's kind of like he's just finding himself. So it's it leaves you with a state of confusion, You don't know if you're doing it the right way, if you're repping or if you're hard, or, you know, your manhood is on the line, is at stake, you know. So it causes a lot of confusion.
You were 14 years old when you joined?
Yep.
Okay.
87.
Okay. How tough is it to get out? Is you know, once you're in, once you go through the ritual of joining and becoming accepted, is it tough to just say, well, you know, hey, I'm just leaving and I made a mistake? How does that work if someone wants to quit?
Well, you know, usually they say, you know, blood in, blood out. There is no getting out, but that's what men say. When you get to worshiping and stepping up to a real cause to fight for a cause that isn't a bogus one like gangbanging, it doesn't matter what they say, what you can or can't do. Mm-hmm. With God leading in your life, all things are possible. Mm-hmm. So for some people, it may be tough because they're weak-minded. And maybe they're, you know, not courageous enough to step up to the plate and declare their own independence as a man. Mm-hmm. So for some people, it's tough, and for some people, it's easier. For me, in the beginning, it was a bit, like, kind of tough just because I felt like I would be letting people down. Mm-hmm. I had to get to the point to where it didn't matter about them because they really didn't care about me. When I was locked up, nobody came to visit and, you know, gave my mom any money or checked on my sons or anything, so that made it a little bit more easier for me to transition out of that and into something that was more fruitful of a cause. So,
is it difficult to talk with your sons about the dangers of gangbanging, or is it do you try to discourage them, or do they look up to that kind of life? You know, being that the moniker that you had kind of established.
I believe. You know, it's much easier for me to converse with my children about, you know, trying to deter them from gangs, but I don't never cram it down their throat, because when you tell a child no, that means go in their eyes. So I just kind of give them a picture of the bad and the good, you know, what's responsible for shaping and molding me into the man that I've become and the man I foresee myself to become in the future, and kind of let them, you know, weigh out the decision to whether they want to bang or whether they want to, you know, be a productive member of society. Mm-hmm. You know, and choose a different route.
Mm-hmm. How does one gang become enemies with another? How is that established?
Confusion. Confusion. Because really, if you know the historical events of how each gang got established, it wasn't, you know, a group posing against another group as far as the African populace is concerned. But it turned into that because of, you know, colors and this and that, or just misdirection throughout the years. It's like a game of can. If you have a circle, you tell one person one and it go around, and by the time it gets all the way back around, even just a small group of five, the message is no longer the same as when it started, and that's within a couple minutes of time. So mm-hmm. I guess throughout the years, as the cleavages begin to be, you know, set in place between individuals, those seeking power and those just seeking a sense of belonging, that, you know, the name of what gangbanging stood for changed. It just differentiates now, and that didn't come till later on anyway.
Does anyone ever at any time challenge the leadership, someone of a lower rank, say, and they might want to feel like, you know, they want to take over or that they could do a better job than the leader? Does those kinds of situations occur?
all the time, all the time, and very seldom.
Always being challenged.
Yes, and very seldom is it someone who wants to, you know, create something positive, because they're not going to let him. You know, doing something good is frowned down upon. If the set morals and values that have been set forth for, you know, the specific code of ethics held by, you know, the turf or a gang is broken, then, you know, they're not going to want you there. And what I mean by that is if you ain't going out to do something to represent your turf, your gang, your hood, throwing up gang signs or beefing with what you deem to be rivals, then you're really not a productive member of that small group.
Mm-hmm. Has there ever been a truce proposed or established between gangs?
Yeah.
In your knowledge, and how did that come about?
In the early 90s, Jim Brown came down here, and he snatched up about four or five prominent gang members from California. Some were still facing a lot of time.
You're talking about the football players?
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, some of them were still facing time. And I guess, you know, it was stipulated in their parole conditions or probation conditions that they would come down here and kind of curb a lot of gang violence that was transpiring at that time. Mm-hmm. So there was a truce, and we would ride around with water guns and water balloons, and that was the way that we would drive by, do our little drive by. So we turned something negative into something positive and fun, and it didn't last that long because of the deep-seated, you know, I guess, animosity already set in place between rivals or different gangs.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to It Takes a Village. I'm Shahid Hamid, my host of It Takes a Village, and my guest today is Mr. Arj Johnson, a.k.a. Joe Johnson / Solo, and we're talking about gangbanging and the turnaround. You don't want to forget that, okay? So, Joe, how do you think the people as a collective can better help produce more positive aspects of our youth, more positive interaction with our youth?
That's simple. I think instead of always frowning down on, you know, the young mindset, to kind of, you know, get in the thick of the mud in the crowds and start talking to them, you know, learn how to speak their language. There's five basic love languages. And it's up to you to decide what those are. But there's many different dialects to each language spoken. And our youth speak a language of their own. And if you can't reach them using their language, I think that you become, I guess, more of a problem to them than anything else, and more part of the confusion that's already set forth in their minds. So if we learn to speak their language fluently to bring them up to par in manhood or adulthood, you know, because we have a lot of promiscuous and whatever, poverty-stricken and troubled-stricken young ladies, too. If we learn to speak their language fluently, then we can probably make a difference because we're listening, and it takes a certain amount of consistency and persistence to be able to reach, you know, that goal of learning their language. So that in itself, we're putting in time with our youth, on our youth, and they feel more worth something then. You know, they don't feel like you're just looking them over or like they don't have a voice. We need to give them a voice first. We need to learn their language so that they can learn our language. Mm-hmm. I believe if you're using tools, talking over their head, certain terminology that they are currently unable to identify with, then whatever you're trying to teach them is going to go right over their head and right up under their feet, you know.
Mm-hmm. Do you see that happening now?
I see it happening now. Like I said, instead of frowning down upon our youth, we need to merge ideas. We need to, you know what's going on in their heads. We need to not be so disconnected. Right now, there's a lot of disconnect going on. Mm-hmm. I think some of our elders need to stop fearing what they've been voicing amongst one another and take it to our, you know, our youth, take it to our younger generations. Sit down with them, talk to them. Don't run from them just because their pants are sagging and they have a different way of talking out the side of their mouth, you know. Mm-hmm. If you feel it's disrespectful, correct them. But there's, you don't want to be overbearing in your tone and run them away, send them running away, because it's a sensitive generation those youth are these days. So if you use a certain amount of censorship and find that balance to where you can bridge that cleavage and that gap in our relations as, you know, the young and the old, I think that we can make a difference as a collective.
Yeah. Being that you were once part of the problem, mm-hmm. before your life got turned around, do you feel that you and others like you can make a difference?
I do. Not. It's just not a feeling. It's a belief. It's a tribe belief, and your relief will come. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I really strongly believe, since we've been through the fire, those that are currently going through it, I think that we have a lot of the tools and some great advice to bestow onto our youth to where they want to mature and produce change.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm always amazed at the amount of guns in our society.
Mm-hmm.
We know that the NRA has got their lobbies, and it doesn't look like guns is going away anytime soon.
Mm-hmm.
But where, for goodness sake, does our youth get these guns from? Where, when you was coming up, where do the guns come from?
They come from all over. If you know, you got parents that have maybe a gun case full of guns, and you got these spoiled, you know, yuppie individuals that go in that cabinet, and they trying to be down, hip squares, what we used to call them, and they come out with all these guns, and then it gets into the hands of those that, you know, really been searching for guns, or they break in a gun shop, or however they can get their hands on one is how they're going to. So there's no one specific area where these guns come from, mm-hmm. like it was back in the day.
What do you mean, like it was back in the
day? Well, you know, that old theory about how the CIA was planting guns in the neighborhood, and you know that I don't even know if it was California or if it was New York, but I think
it was California.
Yeah, they had put a one of those trucks, one of those big old trucks, U.S. Marshal trucks, full mm-hmm. of guns in the back. You know, mm-hmm. one of the army trucks it was, I believe.
It had some railway cars, I believe it was filled, yeah. and they just left it in the black community.
Yeah.
Had station wagon left in the black community,
yeah.
and a lot of times my own personal belief, my own personal opinion, it was a lot of times you see these people like the Koch brothers and mm-hmm. These rich conservative not politicians per se, but lobbyists, or mm-hmm. I'm not even sure whether you call them lobbyists.
Hood politicians is what I call them.
Hood politicians, criminals.
Uh-huh.
But these are people in the corporate world, and, you know, people who never really had any love for the black community have
right.
now different ways of infusing drugs and mm-hmm. guns and so forth. They had that thing where the CIA was putting... was dealing with crack cocaine. It's
straight from Peru.
It's straight from Peru,
mm-hmm.
and a whole host of things. But not to get necessarily off on that, but just wonder sometime with all of the proliferation of guns in our communities, and then our tendency of, you know, taking those, like you say, the drive-bys and
mm-hmm.
and the things of that nature that.
Well, you see, that epidemic is kind of dying out. People are more hand-to-hand combat these days.
They're getting back to that?
Hand-to-hand combat. They'd rather, you know, walk up to you and make sure that they get their man. And these days, it's not a drive-by, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's not a lot of them popping off these days. But, mm-hmm. yeah, they sure will walk up to you and shoot you up 7 times, 9 times, however mm-hmm. many it take. They mean business these days. So it's like an 87 epidemic all the way over again, in between 87 and, like, 90. 93, 95.
Mm-hmm. During time, one of the outgrowths of gang banging, what are some of the things that you, I know that you took up singing and so forth, and
mm-hmm.
You sang before going to prison, and how did that work? What are some of the things that you did over the 16 years or so?
Well, before, and I understand your question, before I even fell on this case, I used to sing, you know, a little bit and do it. I did a couple of shows. But while I was down, I really honed in on my, you know, lyrical content, being able to produce how I was feeling. And that was, you know, via musical lyrical content, mm-hmm. rather than just writing and rapping about it. I started singing about how I was feeling because I, you know, it's more emotionally intact for me to do it that way. I feel a little bit more and at one and at peace with singing how I'm feeling. So my lyrical content started producing itself while I was down, and so did my playing, guitar, mm-hmm. even the keyboard, you know, in the chapel area.
Right. Yeah, we got a taste of that on the last program that we did, the knowing that you rap as well as play the guitar, as well as kind of multi-talented. Kind of, you want to give us a little demonstration again, maybe a little bit of what you honed, the skills you honed while you was down?
Sure, not a problem. I got a song called, you know, I experienced a lot while I was down, from losing individuals that I thought that was on my team, you know, by my side, that would stand with me. So I started losing friends, male and female friends, and even some family members who, you know, suggested that they would never leave my side, which we all know, you know, you got a life out here, so I don't hold them accountable for, you know, my actions. But I got a song called I Won't Ask You Why, and this is to, you know, to God, and to some individuals as well. And I'll just sing it so you can hear the lyrical content. I've been given plenty and too much spare time to walk a path that's straight with God leading my life. I've done a lot of wrong, always trying to front like it was all good. But deep down inside, I never clearly understood. But I won't ask you why. Oh, no. Oh, I won't ask you why. Oh, no. No, I won't. I won't ask you why. Oh, no, God. People, I won't ask you why. Oh, no, I won't. I'm just an individual who's terrified of my present journey. But when I feel that fearful flow, I know the Lord accompanies me. And even when I'm righteous, chauffeurs of evil try to steer me wrong, saying I'm not free from impurities, but God says, child, press on. Oh, but I won't ask you why. Oh, no. I won't ask you why. Oh, no, I won't. I won't know, ask you why. And it just goes on and on and on like that. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. One reason being, you know, we all seem like we have the authority to question God, mm-hmm. but we don't.
Yes. A taste of the potential of our youth and of our people. Mr. Arj Johnson, a.k.a. Joe Johnson / Solo, here on It Takes a Village. Arj, we certainly want to thank you for taking time out of your schedule to come and address this audience, because it's a subject that needs addressing, past due. So we certainly want to thank you, because it does take a village to raise a child. As we close, just before we close, real quickly, what did you learn from this whole experience of from 14 years old to now?
I learned how to be selfless rather than selfish. I learned that, you know, the success that I'm in pursuit of is not about me. It's not about me anymore. It's about, you know, those that I can help to reach. And I'm doing it out of the kindness of my heart. I don't look for anything back in return except for you to learn or them to learn, you know, what it takes in order to survive in a world that really doesn't care about them. What it takes in order to plant some fruitful seeds in the minds of those who, you know, the chauffeurs of evil, like I say, stepped in. They didn't hand over their car keys, and now they're getting drove crazy. I just want to be there for them.
All right. We're certainly glad that you're here for us.
Man,
thank you so much.
I appreciate the opportunity.
Okay. We look forward for more from you in the future.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. I'm Shahid Hamid for It Takes a Village. Thank you so much for tuning in. Remember, we're on every first Friday here on Community Radio, KBOO 90.7. Also, if you'd like to hear copies of the program, go to visit our website, kboo.fm, under It Takes a Village, and you can look at a whole array of programs that we've done trying to reach that place as a community. Until next time, I'm Shahid. Peace. I'm out.
There was a strong sense that this was the beginning of something that would spread across the country.
On Sunday, November 3rd, at the historic Hollywood Theater, KBOO presents an exclusive benefit screening of the film KPFA On the Air.
This documentary tells the powerful story of the beginnings of listener-sponsored radio in the United States with the birth of Pacifica in Berkeley in 1949.
KPFA On the Air chronicles the origins of the free speech movement, the first stirrings of the student movements at Berkeley, in opposition to the Vietnam War in the early 1960s.
Eventually spawning a network of free-form, independent radio stations across the country, including KBOO, which came on the air in 1968. So come join us at the Hollywood Theater Northeast 41st and Sandy Boulevard, Sunday, November 3rd at 7 in the evening.
Help keep community radio strong and thriving into the future.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to help co-sponsor the Visegrad Group PDX Festival, November 9th from 1 p.m. to 7 p.m. at the Polish Hall, 3832 North Interstate Avenue in Portland. To celebrate the 95th anniversary of independence of the Czech, Polish, and Hungarian nations, this one-day festival will share traditions, history, arts and crafts, and national food of the Czech, Polish, and Hungarian communities within Multnomah County. Again, the Visegrad Group PDX Festival will take place at the Polish Hall, 3832 North Interstate Avenue, on Saturday, November 9th, from 1 to 7 p.m. More information about this KBOO-sponsored event may be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Tune in every Saturday from 5 to 7 for some blues music. Blues and More airs every first and third week, hosted by Shahid. Blues Junction airs every second and fourth week, hosted by Tom Wendt.
This is KBOO Portland, where the time is approximately 11:31 a.m. Coming up, the workers who put food on our restaurant and kitchen tables. Are struggling to feed themselves and their families. We'll hear Saru Jayaraman, co-director of the Restaurant Opportunity Centers United and author of Behind the Kitchen Door, where he makes the case for bringing justice to our restaurants and how ordinary diners can help. Thank you, KBOO members, for your generous support in our recent membership drive. We're just $9,237 short of our rather ambitious goal. You can help make up the difference at